Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 2, Episode 36, with Dave and Dave. My co-host David Todd is stuck in an airport in New York, didn't get back in time, and had to call Nick Ricchetta back up from the practice squad to give him a helmet this week. Nick, how you doing? Welcome back.
Doing great, Dave. Ready to rock and roll.
Yes, indeed. It is Patriots week, and you know, there's been a lot of talk leading up to this game, as there usually is. Steeler Nation's, you know, not very optimistic, with good reason, with Tom Brady. You know, here's a little breaking news for you. Tom Brady's a pretty good quarterback. And, you know, we'll get into breaking this down in a little bit. But let's start first with the injury report. And that's half the reason why we scheduled this thing a little bit later today, because it took a little time for this to come out today. Chris Hoke, James Harrison, Doug Legursky, they're all out, as we suspected. Chris Hoke evidently was able to move around a little bit today, so, you know, that looks good possibly for a return next week with him. Jason Worlds is down again. I think we all kind of expected that, even though he was limited as well today, too. Hines Ward is questionable, along with James Ferrier. He's questionable with that calf problem that he's got going on. Ferrier saying that he's going to play. Hines Ward, you know, the needle's kind of shifted, you know, to the doubtful side. I don't think it would be smart to rush him on. I much rather would have him the next week against the Ravens, and from what I have kind of gathering from all the beat reports and everything coming out, is that it's not a high ankle sprain. It's probably just one of these 1 week, you know, ankle dings. And let's start with that, Nick. You know, there's not really much surprises there. But how much will the Steelers miss Hines Ward this week if he is down?
I think they're going to miss him more on the mental side, kind of on the ball there. Obviously, you know, we know Hines Ward's pedigree. We know what he brings to the table. But more than his production, I think you're going to miss his leadership on the field, especially against a team like the Patriots and a Bill Belichick and a Tom Brady. I mean, you know, we all know Hines Ward's numbers are going down a bit. He's getting a little older, you know, getting a little long in the tooth, getting a little bit slower. So I think more so than his production on the field, you're going to miss his leadership and, you know, those kind of qualities and such as that. You know, obviously he comes through in the clutch a lot, you know, making a lot of big third down catches. You know, he's one of the best possession receivers to ever play the game. So I think they're going to miss him. I think they're going to miss him more so in the huddle than actually on the field. But it's definitely going to be a blow to the offense. And those younger guys, Emmanuel Sanders, Antonio Brown, Mike Wallace, those guys are going to have to step up in his absence.
Yeah, and, you know, he will be on the sideline, so the leadership will be there if he's down. Emmanuel Sanders evidently is reportedly would start in his place. That's not surprising. And for everybody that thinks, well, why isn't Antonio Brown starting? Hey, you're going to see plenty of 3 and 4 wide receiver sets still in this offense. Sanders is the much better run blocker than Antonio is, and I think Sanders, you know, understands the offense still a little bit better than Antonio does too. I'm not taking anything away from Antonio Brown, because I think he's going to play a huge part in this game. And another good thing is, you know, Jericho Cotri, this guy was signed to be kind of a Hines Ward insurance. He'll be the number 4 receiver if Hines Ward is down. He's going to see plenty of action on this field as well. So, you know, if this was last year, which, let's face it, Ward went out early in the game against the Patriots last year, and those young kids, you know, they were rookies, let's face it. And it wasn't their fault, I don't think, that the Steelers lost the game by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, they're another year experienced, and you know, they know what's going on now. They know the importance of this game. And I think they're going to step up into play. So if you were to pick a game to have Hines Ward out of, you know, I'm okay with it this week. You know, he, as you said, he does bring a lot to the huddle and on field, and he can still move the chains regardless of what people think about his age and all. He's still a fantastic blocker, although he did have his problems last week, especially on an early running play there, but that's going to happen as well. So, you know, not to me too many surprises here. I think we're getting healthy slowly here at the right time. And, well, let's get into the game a little bit now that we have that covered. Let's start first. Yeah, I want to go offense first. So tell me what you expect the Steelers to do on offense versus the Patriots defense.
Well, I think number one is they got to just capitalize on opportunities and blow up holes in the run game. I mean, that Patriots defense is not as good as it may seem to be. We all know there's holes in the secondary, and I just think we can start running up points on the team. And that's where you're going to have to make your opportunities, because with an offense, you know, that has guys like Tom Brady and Wes Welker and those kind of players, you know they can put up, they got the potential of putting up 35, 40 points a game. So you're going to have to sit there and try and match them. I mean, obviously your defense has to step up, but I think overall on offense, you know, there's not really many points. There's not really many key things you can point out. I think it's just run the ball effectively, get that defense on their heels, and just put points on the board, because you're definitely going to have to try and keep up with Brady in the offense.
The way I look at this game, I've gone over a lot of what the Patriots have done on defense this year. And, you know, Mike Tomlin tried to wash it off the other day during his press conference, that, hey, this isn't the 32nd ranked defense in the league. And, you know, basically they've been blowing people out, and that's why their passing numbers are, you know, passing yards allowed high and all like that. Tomlin was just painting you a pretty picture there, trying to respect the opponent, because let me tell you, this pass defense is bad regardless if they're blowing people out or not. The run defense, I think, is serviceable, not great whatsoever. And, you know, I bet Ben Roethlisberger and Bruce Arians haven't gotten a lot of sleep this week, because they love to throw the football, and this is a team that you can throw the football against. And just because of that, though, I think you have to stay honest to the run to some degree. They asked Bruce Arians Thursday, you know, why so many, you know, 80-something percent, 88, 89% runs have been to the right side. And he basically said, because that's where the personnel is. He mentioned the double team efforts of Marcus Gilbert and Ramon Foster on that right side. And that's funny, because I had mentioned this in my offensive line breakdown this past week too, that those two really work good together. And, you know, even if they know that you're going to run right and put a safety up in there to support, you know, they have the personnel to get it done. I think Chris Kimoato, he really has to have a lot better game this week. I don't know if that knee's still bothering him or whatnot, and stupid penalties aside, he really is going to have to get over into that gap on those trap plays, on those counter pikes that the Steelers like to run. And, hey, let's face it, if we can run just enough and run out of some formations that, you know, that they have to respect and pull that safety up in there, hey, I'm fine by that, because that's going to expose that secondary even more of theirs. And we have the tools to tear them apart. I mean, there's no question about it. And you know, part of me wants to say, well, let's go out and throw the ball, you know, 22 straight times to start the game. Realistically, you can't do that. I expect us to throw early, but like you said, I think we have to stay somewhat respectful to the run. I don't think we have to run great in this game, but just enough to bring play action into play.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. I really think, you know, like you said before, Hines Ward being down is not really going to be too much of a drop-off, because, you know, with a guy like Emmanuel Sanders, obviously much more explosive than Hines Ward, more of a playmaker. I really think these young receivers in Wallace and Brown and Sanders can run through this defense, run all around them, get over the top, hit seams, especially Heath Miller hitting seams down the middle. I really think a pass offense can blow up this game. And like you said, we don't need to go out and you know, run the ball 40 times and pound them. If their pass defense is that awful, you know, play to your strengths, play to their weakness, and let these receivers just run rampant on them. And I think this is going to be a great game for offensive line as well. You know, their pass rush is not up to par. It's never been. And I think this can be a really good confidence boost for our O-line to get these guys on their heels and get them moving back on skates and protect Ben and give him time to open up and really make plays on the field.
Yeah, when you look at their secondary, they kind of shocked some people today when they released Lee Bodden out of nowhere. Now, of course, this is a guy that hasn't had a good year this year after having, I think it was last year that they even extended him too after the 2009 or season, I think, or 2010. Just recently, I forget the specifics on it, but they just gave him a big contract, and out of nowhere, they've cut him. And on the other side there with McCourty, in fact, Pro Football Focus, I put this in my Six Around the Web links today. They have a great breakdown on this is a kid that had a great rookie season. It's kind of going through a sophomore slump there, and they've really broken that down real well. If you get a chance, go to Pro Football Focus and check that out. I'm going to name these rest of these names to you. Nick, you know, you got McCourty. You're going to have Kyle Arrington now starting on the other side. Lee Bodden was playing their nickel role. He's gone now. Antoine Molden, his reserve corner for him. Philip Adams and Razai Dowling. He, you know, Mr. Injury Bug. He's the Patriots version of Jason Worlds, I guess. Of course, we knew this with him coming out of college and all, but you know, he's doubtful on the injury report. That they're not good on numbers right there. So I think you spread these guys out as often as you can and attack the weakness there. You know, their safeties are so-so with Josh Barrett and Patrick Chung. I like Chung as a center fielder, but, you know, they're going to test this Josh Barrett, get him down in the box quite a bit there. And you know, I say spread these guys out and throw.
Oh, I totally agree. The first word that comes to my mind when you named all those names is just young and vulnerable. I mean, if you're going to have their third and fourth corner on guys like Antonio Brown and Jericho Cotri, and then having a linebacker try and cover Heath Miller, I mean, there's just mismatches across the board. And even with McCourty, you know, probably going to be trying to blanket Wallace and stuff like that. I mean, there is not one corner on that team that can cover any of the Steelers wide receivers one-on-one. So there's going to be mismatches all over the field, and Ben's just going to have to make the right read and set his feet and not get too antsy back there in the pocket and just deliver a strike.
If I know Belichick, too, he's not going to let Mike. He's going to do everything in his power not to let Mike Wallace beat him up over the top. So that means that they've got to give some safety help to Cheetah safety to whatever side Wallace is on there. So although, you know, if Wallace might only have, you know, let's say they do a good job and hold him to three catches for 45 yards. As you said, you've got guys like Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders, and let's not forget about Cotri either. Cotri knows this Patriots defense from playing them so damn much year in and year out. So, you know, maybe he's going to end up being the key to this game and Heath Miller, too, for that matter, if indeed Hines Ward is down. So, you know, when you look at their numbers, it does not stack up in their favor. And also, you know, I did a post last night about yards after the catch on both sides of them. As good as the Patriots' offense is on yards after the catch, and we'll talk about them, their offense here in a minute. Their defense has been just as bad, man. They give up a lot of yards after the catch. And if you can get Antonio Brown or Emmanuel Sanders on a slant or somewhere up the seam and hit them in stride here, these guys, they're not good at tackling back there in that Patriots secondary. So you could have some really explosive plays coming out of there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, the thing you want to do with the playmakers like Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, and Mike Wallace, get the ball in their hands early and just allow them to just run rampant. You know, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders and Antonio Brown are lightning bugs. And Mike Wallace, we all know what kind of speed he has, but I've never really seen Mike Wallace, you know, run all over the field and juke people out and stuff like that, where Emmanuel Sanders and Antonio Brown got a lot of wiggle. And if you get the ball in their hands early, especially on these crossing routes and stuff like that, and it's, you know, stick your foot in the ground, one cut, and up the field, I really, really think there's going to be a lot of opportunities to make a lot of plays after the catch. And like you said, with the Patriots defense not tackling well and giving up a lot of yards after catch, that's where your big chunks of yardage are going to come. And, you know, it's on these things like the slant routes and the quick hitters and the quick hitters up the seams and even screens and such, you just got to get the ball in their hands early and just allow them to just use their ability to make a play.
And because of that, I think Belichick knows this. I mean, he's a defensive mind too, and I kind of suspect them. I suspect them to try to come after Brady. I mean, after Roethlisberger to force him to get the ball out of his hands a little bit quicker this week. I don't think they just want to sit back and let him, you know, have the time in the pocket. Although some teams have done good, you know, this year we've seen with only three or four guys, you know, passing. I mean, you've done a lot of tape breakdown for me as well. One good thing that we've seen over the last few weeks with Max Starks being back now, Marcus Gilbert back on the right side, we've seen it kind of stabilized on the tackle spot there for us. At Kimoato, he's been a little bit, you know, well, I mean, let's face it, he has been a problem there all this season, but you know, there's no other choice there because Doug Legursky's down for a little bit while, you know, a little longer here. I think Ramon Foster's been serviceable at right guard. He's gonna give up a couple of pressures in there, maybe a sack, but you know, if they can keep the pressure to a limit or manageable for Ben, which is basically what it's been for him the last few weeks here, you know, and kind of control and pick up these blitzes with these backs, you know, when called on, you know, I think I really like the Steelers' offense chances to at least, you know, put up some points on the board. And that, let's face it, that's what it's going to take in this game with them, because we're not going to shut the Patriots out. I think we all respect and know that. But on the flip side, they're vulnerable. Let's flip over to the other side of the ball there. We have seen, you know, I'm just trying to go through my head of what Dick LeBeau's going to do this week, and all I can do is guess. Like everybody else, you're not going to go into this game with a traditional nickel because you've got James Harrison out, you know, at right outside linebacker again. Lawrence Timmons is going to get the start over there. We've seen quite a bit of dime. Or big nickel, as I like to call, with Ryan Mundy in there as of late. And late in the game against the Cardinals, too, we saw some traditional dime with Cortez Allen on the field. So tell me, I'm going to put the Dick LeBeau hat on you. I know it's not going to fit very well, but tell me if you're Dick LeBeau, what do you do different now? What you've done in the past hasn't worked the last few times. What do you do different, Nick?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you that last year I was at that Patriots game. I had traveled out to Pittsburgh to see that game, and it was the most miserable walk back to my hotel that I have ever had to experience in my entire life. Me and my dad looked down at the pavement the entire time, and I don't think spoke a word till morning. It was miserable. So I think the thing you got to do that was so evident last year is obviously you got to get pressure on Brady. He doesn't fare very well when he has to run around a little bit. He likes to curl up like a little ball when he gets touched, so I think you got to get a lot of pressure on him. And I think the one big key that you got to do is stop those two tight ends. Aaron Hernandez and Gronkowski cannot beat you down the seams this time. I remember last year this was the big William Gay game where everybody just wanted his head and they were ready to burn him up and take there. And you know, he got picked on that game, and it wasn't so much that William was, you know, had bad coverage. He was on Gronkowski's hip a couple times, and he just couldn't make a play. So I think this time around, you got to stress to your defense, Dickleball, to stress to the defense that we got to stop these tight ends from running all over us. You know what Welker's going to bring to the table. You know what Brady does, but Brady is going to be looking for his tight ends to get open against a guy like William Gay, against our linebackers, against a guy like Ryan Mundy, and I think that's the key to stopping this Patriots defense, because we've seen what tight ends can do to the Steelers, especially in the first game this year against the Ravens. Dennis Pitta and Dixon killed us down the seams and on the out routes and stuff like that. So I think the key is just going to be to getting to Brady and stopping these two dynamic young tight ends.
Yeah, and you know, if you harken back to the game last year too, the Steelers didn't blitz very much in that game, and when they did, they didn't get home on Brady. And I kind of suspect, you know, kind of the same game plan this time. I think when they did blitz mostly last year, it was on the edges, and to me, that's a mistake because Brady gets the ball out this year quicker than he ever has. And I have a breakdown also. In some of his passes, I think in the Yak post that I did just last night that I think it's some 80-something, some crazy number, like 80-something percent. Here it is, 88% of Brady's passing yards originate on passes 20 yards or less. And, you know, that's just incredible. And because of the yak, too, the yards after the catch, Welker is just sick. How many percentage of his yards this year comes after the catch, and he leads the league in that stat. And Gronkowski is 15th overall in the league, and these guys have only played six games to this point, and a lot of teams have played seven, and they're still up there like that. So, you know, with Welker, I don't know. You know, Tomlin claimed that it's not a foregone conclusion that Ike Taylor's going to follow Wes Welker around the field. I say why not? You know, they've been playing a little bit more man as of late, I've noticed, in the secondary at times. Why not put your best on best, try to take Welker out of the game? He's going to get his 4, 5, 6 catches, but if you can wrap him up right after the catch, that's one more play, you know, play that they have to make there instead of them knocking off chunks of yardage at a time. Another thing that I don't think the Steelers want to do is, despite the news that Casey Hampton has practiced all week, he's not on the injury report, you don't want Tom Brady to catch you in base defense. You know, I just don't think so, because look, if you harken back to a few times this year, most notably the week one game they had against the Dolphins, they open up with that damn hurry up offense and just gassed the living hell out of the Dolphins defense. And if Brady catches you with the wrong personnel on the field, he's gonna shift it into overdrive, and he's gonna make it where you cannot get your sub packages in there. So, you know, despite Casey being healthy and all, I say, hey, good for you, Steve McClendon. I thought he had a good game last week against Arizona with his first career start. I say the hell with that, man. I say you put that dime out there, whether it be a big nickel type dime or four corners and two safeties type dime out there, and I dare them to run the ball, and I dare them to go deep. I line up man across on them. I when you do blitz, which I don't expect the Steelers to blitz often, when you do, I expect it to come up the middle. And you damn sure better get home, because, you know, if you're not, Brady's going to find, he's going to drill it right across the center there on a crossing route to Welker or a quick release to Branch or something like that. So personally, that is how I would attack Brady this time. And you mentioned a good point about William Gay last year, and we all like, you know, William Gay takes his share of criticism. They have a great shot of the coach's tape from one of those plays on that deep seam to Gronkowski, and you said it best. William Gay is right there in his pocket, and that ball is just perfectly placed. You cannot defend the perfect pass, and you're going to have to make Brady be perfect again. If he beats you by being perfect and you've got good coverage, well, then, hey, you know, they're definitely going to win the ball game. But personally, that's the way I would attack the Patriots offense here.
Yeah, now going back to the point you made about, you know, Tomlin, you know, not wanting to tip his hand a bit. You know, if I was him, just let Ike follow Wes Welker all over the field. Not only is he your best cover guy, but Ike Taylor is an awesome tackler, and you cannot let Wes Welker get the ball in his hands and start breaking tackles. Because, like you said, his yards after the catch, his playmaking ability after he gets the ball in his hands is absolutely insane. And you got to have a guy like Ike Taylor. You know, if he's not going to make a play on the ball, he's got to be able to wrap him up and get him on the ground, because there's just no way you can allow Welker to get on you and you know, start breaking tackles and get in the open field, because he's just going to absolutely cut you up. And I honestly think the two biggest keys in this game are going to be, you know, it could end up being William Gay again and even Ryan Mundy. If you're going to have that big dime in there or that big nickel package and he's going to be on the field, you know, I have a feeling that he's going to end up being on one of those tight ends, and William Gay's going to be on the other one. And those guys are just going to have to play solid. I mean, if you're going to be playing zone, you cannot allow these guys to just run free through your zone. You got to get hands on them, and you got to make the tackle if they catch the ball. And if you're going to be playing man, You know Brady's going to put it on him, so you got to stick in his hip. You got to stick in his back pocket. And I think William Day and Ryan Mundy are going to play huge roles in this game, and it's going to be a make or break for both of those guys.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think you nailed it more on Monday, too, because I think he is going to play a big role in this game. And he's a big physical safety. You know, I would say he probably can run with Gronkowski. You know, don't get me wrong, Gronkowski's not the slowest creature at all, but I think Monday can be physical enough with him and at least be more on the same plane with him. You know, with William Gay, Gronkowski's pretty much eating soup off of his head. You know, and with Monday, at least you have a little bit more size there, I think, and just a bigger body on top of it that can bring him down after the catch. So I think you're right there. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, to me, I say take away the middle of the field. If Brady is happy at those 5 yards out, you know, underneath Keenan Lewis, you know, Keenan Lewis, I think we could see this game where Keenan Lewis is targeted probably 8 or 9 times. As long as he gives up the underneath ball and is right on the tackle there, I'm fine with that. Make them stay patient, which Brady probably will be, but, you know, it's going to take time for them to move down the field doing that. And at the end of the day, you know, so what if Keenan Lewis has given up 8 catches for, I don't know, let's say 60 yards or whatnot, as long as they're not breaking anything after the catch there, I'm fine. It's just that middle seam, middle portion of the field that they have to shut down this year. And last year they were in nickel, you know, and they just couldn't get it done because, let's face it, Ferrier with this calf injury, he can't run with these guys even when he doesn't have the calf injury. You know, Foot's going to be, as you know, Foot would be a mismatch too. Lawrence Timmons on the other side, I think he's a big part of this game too, more so dropping in coverage because, let's face it, he went against one of the worst left tackles in the league last week against the Cardinals in Levi Brown, and he didn't, outside of a few pressures where he pretty much came clean, he really didn't make a big impact, you know, on the outside as far as that went. So I'd much rather see him dropping in coverage, maybe on a tight end or you know, on that side over there, because I don't think he brings a lot to the table as far as pass rush ability goes. I think that's Lamar Woodley's hat right now. He's been on fire lately, the way he's playing after getting off to a slow start. So, you know, I say rush 3 or 4 guys and just try to get in Brady's face, try to get those hands up with Brett Kiesel and tip a ball or something like that, and, you know, try to make a play there. I say, hey, Tom, if you want to try to beat us deep, go ahead, because Tom Brady has not thrown the deep ball a lot this year. And Lord knows when a ball gets hung up in the air like that with Troy Polamalu back there, the things that can happen like there. So I'm okay if you give up one deep touchdown a game as long as they're not making a living off of the underneath stuff.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, like you said before, you can't allow Brady to get rolling. You definitely got to get in his face and make him uncomfortable, because if he can sit back there and run that no-huddle offense and just dink and dunk down the field, you know, 9 yards here, 13 yards here, another 7 yards here, you know, if you allow him to just sit back there and be comfortable and pick apart your defense, he's going to do it all game. And, you know, that offense is so high-powered and so well-conditioned that, you know, they're in that no-huddle all the time. And if you're going to allow Brady to get in the rhythm like that, I mean, you're not going to stop him. Let's face it, no matter, you know, how good Vic LeBeau is or the personnel he got on the field, if Tom Brady gets in the rhythm and he has, you know, all day to stand back there in the pocket, drink a cup of tea, and then throw the football, he's just gonna pick you apart. And one thing I want to just bring up real quick that I saw some people expressing a little bit of concern, like on Twitter and stuff like that, about Ferrier possibly being down, and then they're saying, you know, what's Stevenson Sylvester going to do jumping in here, you know, if Lawrence Timmons is going to be on the outside and stuff like that. I just want to clear it up that I don't think Stevenson Sylvester is going to be seeing the field much, because you're not going to be in your base defense much. You're going to have guys like, if Ferrier couldn't go or, you know, gets banged up during the game, it's going to be Larry Foote and Lawrence Timmons on the field. I don't think you're going to throw a guy out there like Stevenson Sylvester, a young guy trying to read Tom Brady, so I just wanted to clear that up real quick if anybody was worrying about it.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I mean, the guy hardly has – heck, I think Chris Carter, I think the rookie has more defensive snaps than Sylvester is, and I'm trying to remember if Sylvester even has any defensive snaps this year. I don't think he does. Of course, Michael is the one that charts my defense for me. I can't remember Sylvester having any snaps, hardly any this year on the defensive side of the ball. Maybe he got one or two lined up on the outside there, but I'm with you. This is not the game to have Steven Sylvester in my opinion. So if Ferrier can't go, which he's saying he's going to be there, he's going to show up, then it's going to be Foot inside, and you're going to go from there. You know, it would be super nice. We've talked about this before. We've talked about it for a few weeks now. It sure would be super nice if Jason Worlds would decide to get healthy at some point here, because this is a type game right now where you could use him on that at right outside linebacker with James Harrison down once again, and let Timmons come back to where he's most effective on the inside. But yeah, I mean, I know people are excited about Sylvester. I think he's got a lot of promise going forward too. I think he was really hampered this year, as a lot of these young kids were, by no OTA sessions and no mini camps leading up to training camp and all like that, but now is not the time to throw him into the deep end of the pool. And you know, this is probably the same thing with Cortez Allen too. Even though we saw Cortez, you know, kind of get some snaps last week there, I was glad to see that. It'll be interesting to see if he gets any snaps this week in that sort of dime. And Nick, let me throw something else at back at you here. I don't think this is going to happen, but, you know, everybody should keep it in the back of the head. We have Bryant McFadden's back running up and down the field on special teams, okay? So he's not on the injury report. That hamstring is not bothering him. If he's not healthy enough to run up and down on special teams, then he wouldn't be active every Sunday. I just want to throw out there, and what's your thoughts? You know, maybe this is a guy that comes in on some of these dime packages as the fourth DB to match up with, say, a Chad Ochocinco on the outside, and that would allow you to move Ike Taylor more inside into that slot to run around with Welker. So am I crazy to think that? How far off am I on that?
No, I don't think it's far off at all. I mean, I think you got to weigh all your options, but I think they're going to start. I think to start off, they're going to leave, Ike out there and have Keenan Lewis then on the other outside guy and William Day and probably keep Mundy out there in both slots and whatever. But you know, if a guy like Mundy is getting eaten alive or something like that, you might want to slide, Day inside and slide Ike inside and allow Keenan and Bryant McFadden on the outside, and you know, that's always a possibility because Bryant McFadden's healthy now. And you know, it's funny because I just subbed last week, and I saw him standing out there on the sideline. I'm like, man, I haven't seen anything from Bryant, and he's running around on special teams, like you said, so, and that's always an option. Now let me bounce something off you real quick. What do you make of Cortez Allen being out there on the field more than Curtis Brown?
I don't know. I think that's evidently Brown had the back tightened up with the back spasm and all like that. But I think we knew kind of going. I think Cortez is better suited as an outside type corner. I think Curtis is more of an inside type guy initially until he gets his feet wet. And let's face it, which one of these two do you think is probably smarter? One went to the Citadel. No offense to the Texas people out there, but Curtis Brown, Texas guy. I think Cortez Allen a little bit brighter. He was a little bit raw, which is less habits to break for Carnell Lake and company. So and although he did, I was worried about Cortez during the preseason with all that time that he missed, and in fact I thought that was a key point in one of those late, in those late preseason games that he got in there. He made a fantastic play. I think it was on the first or second play he was in the game there on the outside spot that it ended up. I think he ended up tipping the ball and it ended up getting picked off there. So or close to getting picked off. I can't remember exactly what it was in that, but I mean he made a splash as soon as he finally hit the field late preseason. I think he I'm not worried about Curtis Brown yet. Curtis Brown is a tremendous special teams player helping out there. I think his time's going to come. I just don't think it's this season. Back to McFadden real quick and bouncing and kind of wrapping that up on the bow up on him. The guy is not fantastic in man. You know, the guy is more of a zone outside corner anyway. So and that was more we saw when he went to Arizona for a season there, trying to fit in with that man type coverages over there. That was not his strong suit. Now, if you put him on a guy outside, maybe like Chad Ochocinco or whatnot, just say, hey, don't let this guy get behind you. You know, maybe that's an option. Once again, I'm not saying that McFadden's going to see any snaps on the defensive side of the ball this year, but I'm just throwing it out as an option there. If they were seriously considering doing it, I would have thought last week would have been the time to put him in instead of Cortez Allen. So, you know, who knows what Dick LeBeau has up his sleeve this week. But, you know, You're only gonna beat LeBeau so many times until he figures you out, I think, and hopefully this is the week. And I think we've had enough time with this dime since James Harrison went down. I think even me and David said, hey, maybe this is a blessing of sorts of us having to get into this dime, because some of these great quarterbacks on teams, you know, they're gonna spread us out and go from there. So it's gonna definitely be one that I'm going to watch probably 50 times after this game is complete to see what exactly LeBeau did on this thing. But I think the keys on it is you're going to have to get pressure on Brady with the limited amount of guys in the pass rush. I think you got to protect the middle of the field. And I think you've got to stay out of the base defense as much as you can. You can't let them catch Casey Hampton and both your and four linebackers on the field and get into that no huddle and all. If they do, Casey Hampton better drop down on the field like somebody shot him in the back of the hamstring there. And I'm not a fan of doing that like the Giants did so blatantly. But, hey, Casey's had a problem. Maybe he fakes better.
He's good. I mean, yeah, you're completely right. You can't get caught in base defense, especially if they bring out, you know, three and four wide receivers. You know, it's just a recipe for disaster. That's the bottom line.
Okay. Well, I think we've kind of torn that up pretty damn good there and both sides of the ball. It's going to be, I admit, I don't know exactly what LeBeau's going to do. I don't think anybody knows what LeBeau's going to do. I've got a better grasp on what the Steelers' offense is definitely going to do, and that's going to throw the ball, throw first, run second, I think, and it would not surprise me either to see Rashard Mendenhall break one of those counterpike pulls this week as well for, you know, another 30, 40 yards if they keep that safety back and all. So it's that time of week again, Nick, that we get into our the picks around the NFL here, and we'll end them with our Steelers pick and all too. So let's kind of start going through here. You got Indianapolis traveling to Tennessee to take on the Titans. I think the current line here, let's see, I think it's 8.5 here. So Tennessee favored by 8.5.
I'm still going to go Tennessee. Indianapolis is just, I've never seen a team play that bad. Last week, taking Drew Brees out at the end there of the third quarter, and they had 62 points already. It's just absolutely ridiculous. I'm going to stick with Tennessee. I think they'll be able to run the ball, throw the ball over that defense, and they're just going to tear them up.
You know what? 8.5 points, man. In Tennessee, I just don't know what to think of this team. Now, they haven't been right since they played the Steelers. 8.5, again, everybody's going to be is jumping on Tennessee. In fact, I think this line opened up at 6.5 or so. And Indianapolis got embarrassed last week. I don't know. I got a funny feeling about this, like I did with that Ravens-Jaguars game last week. I'm not saying Indianapolis wins this, but I think they can keep it close. So give me Indy plus the 8.5. Jacksonville, oh boy, do we owe them one from that game the other night. They did exactly to the Steelers, to the Ravens, what they tried to do to the Steelers with that defense. Joe Flacco just couldn't get anything done with it, and that was nice to see. Boy, they really did us a favor. This week they travel to Houston, take on the Texans, who, and I'm not sure they're going to get Andre Johnson back this week or not, but right now the line, 9.5, Houston favored at home, 9.5.
This is a tough one. You know what? I might reward the Jaguars for doing what they did last week. So I'm going to go with Jacksonville. Hopefully they can, NJD can run the ball a little bit on that Texans defense. I know Texans being at home and Wade Phillips dialing in some blitzes and stuff are probably going to get to Gabbert, but I don't think that the Jaguars are going to win, but I think they can cover that spread.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Nine and a half going on the road. This one I think opened at 10 with Houston, so a lot of people are already starting to jumping on Jacksonville coming off that win. Hey, Matt Schaub's a better quarterback than Joe Flacco. I'm sorry. He might not have the weapons or whatnot, but they've got Arian Foster. They can ball control a little bit better, I think, in my opinion. Jacksonville's still got a strong defense. I'm going to go against you on this one, too. I'm going to take Houston, and I'm going to lay the 9.5. I think they just do. It's a game that they got to have for the division. I think they cover the 9.5. Minnesota travels to Carolina. Let's see, 3.5. Panthers favored at home by 3.5.
This is a tough one because the way Minnesota's kind of been playing lately, playing well, Carolina is, you know, up and down. I'm going to go with Minnesota and Adrian Peterson. I think they can run the ball on that Panthers defense, and no magic from Cam this week.
No magic from Cam. This is going to be a good ball. You two young quarterbacks in here. The kid from Florida State, I thought, you know, had an okay showing last week. I was impressed with him. Cam Newton continues to surprise me with what he's doing. I really am surprised at how fast he's progressed here. Hard to go against a home team here, so give me Carolina and lay the 3.5 points here. New Orleans travels up to St. Louis to take on the Rams. Have you seen if Sam Bradford's going to play in this one?
I have not. I have no idea.
I haven't seen whether or not he's going to play either. I don't think it's going to matter in this one, though. New Orleans coming off that big victory. This one's indoors. They're used to playing indoors. The Saints are favored by 13.5.
Hopefully we can agree on this one because the Saints putting up the points they did last week. Sam Bradford, if he does come back, not going to be fully healthy. Rams defense anemic right now. I'm going to go with the Saints, so let's see if we can agree on one.
13.5 is a bunch of points. People, let's see, this one opened up at 11.5. People on the Saints, people jumping all over that. 13.5, that's two more points. All right, I'll go for it. Let me lay the 13.5. I don't have a good feeling about that one, though. Arizona travels to Baltimore. Baltimore still licking their wounds. The Ravens are at home laying 12.5.
That's a lot of points to lay. But I think Baltimore coming off that big loss last week is going to be pretty hacked off, as Tomlin likes to say, and they're going to go in there. And Ray Rice had a big game. I can't praise Joe Flacco at all, so maybe Ray Rice will get it done. I'm going to go Baltimore at home and lay the point.
Boy, we got some big spreads this week, don't we? Man, oh, man, just the way they look so ugly. I think Lee Evans is going to be out again for this game. The Arizona defense, who knows what they're going to get there. The Steelers probably should have ran on them better than they did, and I think I'm with you. I think Ray Rice probably has a better game this week. I think they'll be able to run the ball a little bit better. I'll be rooting for this pick to go to be wrong, but give me the Ravens, lay the 12.5. Miami travels to the Giants. The time – ticking for head coach Tony Soprano there. The Giants are favored by 9.5 at home.
Yeah, like you said, these spreads are huge. I mean, I think I know the teams that are going to win, but I don't know if I'd be playing any of the games on this ticket. Miami being not a very good team going in at New York, I guess I'm going to lay the points in this one too and go with the Giants. Hopefully they can, you know, get the ground game going, get to Matt Moore a bit, and come out with a victory there and cover.
Yeah, nine. Boy, if this was 9, you know, which it might end up closing at there, who knows. But right now at 9.5, boy, that's dangerous. I guess give me the Giants laying 9.5. Washington travels to Buffalo. Bills just signed Fitzpatrick to a little bit long-term deal there. I think he kind of deserves that. He's been on the same page with his receivers and Fred Jackson. Boy, that guy's running the ball real well for them this year. The Bills are laying 5.5.
This one seems a little easy. I'm going to go with Buffalo. Pitch is going to be happy coming off that big contract. Fred Jackson running the ball the way he is. It's absolutely ridiculous. So explosive. Picking up huge chunks of yardage. Stevie Johnson playing well. And I think they go in and destroy John Beck.
Yeah, I don't see how this one's close. I really like this game, and because of that, I probably should go the other way. But Buffalo lay the 5.5 on my end here. Detroit travels to Denver, kind of trouble in paradise with the Lions right now. Not only are they having problems, but they have to go against Tebow Mania right now. Hey, I told you last week that guy is going to find a way to damn win that damn ball game. He waited till the fourth quarter to do it, but he did it. Or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. No, it was last week, wasn't it? Yeah. 2.5, Detroit's favored, traveling to Denver.
I don't think that's a big enough spread, and I'm going to go with Tebow Magic on this one. Detroit not playing well. When it rains, it pours. My one buddy is a Lions fan, and that's exactly what he said on Twitter last week. And with Stafford being a little banged up, thin air out there in Denver, I'm going to go with Denver and Mr. Tebow.
Boy, that place, let me tell you, they won't be able to bench Tebow for a long time if he pulls this rabbit out of this hat. And as bad as his mechanics are, man, the guy just, sometimes heart can just take over a team. They're going to be without Willis McGahee this week as well. The odds are against him here. I don't know. I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to take Denver and give me those 2.5 points. Let's see, Cleveland traveling all the way out to West San Francisco. Are the 49ers for real? Another big spread here. 49ers laying 9.
That is a tough spread. I think I'm still going to go with San Francisco, being, like you said, Cleveland traveling all the way out there. Frank Gore starting to run the ball better. San Francisco just seems to just be winning. And Cleveland, you know, just getting by, so I'm going to stick with San Fran and go against the division foe.
Yeah, and hopefully Cleveland loses this game. 9 points, it's a bunch, man. Sooner or later, I got to start taking some of these points too. So I think Cleveland keeps this relatively close. You know, maybe they lose by 7. So give me Cleveland plus 9. Cincinnati travels to Seattle. Seattle, or let's see, the Bengals are favored by 2.5 here on the road.
Ooh. This is a tough one. This might be the toughest one on the ticket for me. I might just go with my heart pick here and just say Cincinnati. Is Cedric Benson going to be playing?
I think he's I think this is his week suspension here, so I think Bernard Scott's going to get the start.
You know what? Then give me Seattle, and then I'll go with Seattle. Cedric Benson's out. That Bernard Scott's still a good running back, but he's not Cedric Benson. Cedric Benson's a lot of the offense there, so I'm going to go with Seattle just because they're playing Cincinnati.
Yeah, and I think Pac-Man Jones is back for this game. Not that it's going to matter a whole lot here. You know what? I got a funny feeling about this game, too. Something tells me that Seattle can win this game outright. So give me Seattle plus the 2.5. Dallas travels to Philadelphia. You live outside that city. They're probably about ready to roast and eat Andy Reid by now, especially if he loses this game. Eagles are at home, favored by 3.5 over the Cowboys.
Well, this is going to be, I was going to pick this team anyway, but right as we speak, I'm standing right next to my buddy. He's a Cowboys fan, so I'm going to go with Big D and lay the points just because, and I think maybe, you know, they can get to Vic a little bit, shake him around, and hopefully Big D comes out with a win so I can rip on all my Eagles buddies back here.
Yeah, and I'm with you, too. I think Dallas, I think it's coming together to them for them at the right time right now. I just don't think the Eagles' defense, this dream team is not as good. So give me Dallas plus the 3.5. I think Dallas can win this one outright. San Diego at Kansas City. The Chargers coming off, tough loss to the Jets there. Chargers favored by 3.5.
I'm still going to go with San Diego. Coming off that big loss, you know, they were playing well in the beginning of the game, got up a little bit, and it's just, I think San Diego and North Turner and Phillip Rivers are going to put it together against a very weak Kansas City team and go in there and blow that team out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Chargers rebound this week. 3.5 is not enough to deter me. I'm going to lay the 3.5 with the Chargers. All right, everybody's going to want to know our picks here. Give me Steelers, New England. Steelers, of course, at home. New England right now favored by 3 points.
I just want everybody to know that I will never, ever pick against my team, so it's always going to be Pittsburgh, and I think this one's going to be really close. I think there's going to be pretty many points scored in this game by both teams. So give me Pittsburgh in a 27-24 victory on a last-second sushi field goal so we can celebrate there in the City of Champions.
You stole my score, you rat. you know what? I'm a homer at heart. I'm not afraid to admit that. That's why I follow my team. That's why I blog about my team. My whole life is consumed with the Steelers. It's what I do for a living, you know. That being said, I really like this matchup for the Steelers. I mean, I'm taking my glasses off here. This is a game that they can win. Let me preface that by saying, too, this is also a game that can get away from them very, very quick. And I think we'll know within the first, within the first 10-12 minutes of the game what this game's going to look like. And I think LeBeau's got something in surprise, a surprise this week for the Patriots. And call me a homer, call me whatever you want. But I, first 1-27 wins this ball game. And I'm going to stick with the same score that you had. I think this is 27-24. I think it might come down to even Ben driving the field one last time for the win here, something crazy like that, and I'm going to call it. I think they sacked Brady twice. I think Brady throws two interceptions in this game. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to put it out there the way I think it's going to go down. So Steelers 27, Patriots 24, and we get ready for the Ravens after that.
I hope we're right because if not, we could either look like geniuses or maybe I'll fly down to your house there in Florida and help you bar up the doors and windows and stuff because people are going to come looking for us if we're wrong.
Yeah, they're going to call us a homer either way, here. So it would be nice if they call me a homer and they win. So I'm okay with that. Call me what it will, but I don't fear this game as much as I did the one last year. I got to be honest with you. I just do not fear it. If they can run with them and put points up on the board and hang with them and make it a fourth quarter game, I think it's a game they can win. That being said, like I said, I think we'll know real quick. They can't fall behind this team 21-0 or 20-0 or something like that. They're going to have to get some stops in there. They're going to have to get a sack. They're going to have to get off the field on third down to win this game. But Nick, as always, thanks again for joining me. You got anything else you want to wrap up with here?
I just want to reiterate your point there. I think this game's going to be decided in the first, maybe the first quarter. If you get to Brady, if you stall that offense up, I really don't. They don't seem like a team that can recover very well. I know, Belichick's a genius and Brady being the best quarterback in the league, but if Pittsburgh gets up, being at home in Heinz Field, that place is going to be rocking if they start shutting Brady down and getting to him and making him uncomfortable. And if they win the game early, I think it's going to carry all the way through.
All right. Well, that's about some as hard a hit in action as we can give our listeners here on the Terrible Podcast. And Nick, I appreciate you sitting in for David again last moment, and hopefully David will be back with me on Monday, and we'll be discussing a win. So, Nick, thanks a bunch.
Always a pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
And you've been listening to the Terrible Podcast. Make sure you follow Nick on Twitter at SteelCityKid. 117, all one word. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd at Hammer Speaks, and you can follow the show feed at Terrible Podcast as well. Thanks for listening. We always appreciate all of our listeners, and we hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll talk to you Monday.